And now,
the definition. Definition.
Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is frequently accosted online by right-wingers of a variety of types. Online randos, you know, podcasters and things like that, who are both focused on her and hate her. That is all that they are. The Venn diagram is 50% focused on her, 50% absolutely hating her. But now it's come to the halls of Congress, because she was accosted today by, by a Republican congressman, Representative Ted Yoho, who was coming down the steps on the east side of the Capitol, having just voted, when he approached AOC, who was ascending into the building to cast a vote of her own. In a brief but heated exchange, which was overheard by a reporter, Yoho told Ocasio-Cortez she was disgusting for recently suggesting that poverty and unemployment are driving a spike in crime in New York City during the coronavirus pandemic. "You are out of your freaking mind," he told her. She shot back, telling Yoho he was being rude, which is really just describing accurately what's going on. The two then parted ways, with Ocasio-Cortez heading into the building, while Yoho, joined by Representative Roger Williams, began descending towards the House office buildings. A few steps down, Yoho offered a parting thought to no one in particular, "effing bitch," although he said the entire thing. So we're going to have both her reactions, as well as our own. Adrian, what do you think about this? Seems pretty brazen for elected officials.
It's like, it's just so sad. Yoho is extremely insecure. They go after AOC because she represents everything that they don't want in their old boys club. A younger woman who is intelligent, educated, articulate, and has passion for the people. So they attack her in various ways. And Yoho doing this, it just shows how much nonsense and tomfoolery he has attached to him. Mm-hmm. He's 65. She's 30. It's not only grow up, little boy, but also maybe just not be misogynistic and going after a 30-year-old woman because you feel threatened that she has her own ideas. It's gross.
Well, in particular, to call her disgusting, mm-hmm. and then when she carries on about her job, to yell after her in that particular way. Like, I understand people are complex, but sometimes you get a little window into who they are. If you didn't already know Ted Yoho and all of his history and everything, like, you know who he is based on that interaction. And you also get to find out who Representative Roger Williams is based on that, because here is where it gets perhaps even more pathetic. Now, she said, "That kind of confrontation hasn't ever happened to me, ever. I've never had that kind of abrupt, disgusting kind of disrespect leveled at me. In all these intense news cycles, I've never, ever been treated that way by another member before. I'm frankly quite taken aback." So, understandable. Yoho just says no comment. Probably a good call. He's made enough comments as it is. But Representative Roger Williams, who was in a position to hear the entire back and forth, in fact, walked off with Yoho afterward, said he wasn't paying any mind. Quote, "I was actually thinking as I was walking down the stairs, I was thinking about some issues I've got in my district that need to get done. I don't know what their topic was. There's always a topic, isn't there?" So he was standing right there, but he doesn't know anything.
No,
he didn't hear nothing.
Of course not. And I love it because that's like the one of the core aspects of misogyny, like sexual harassment, like really crummy cultures and how they treat women, is that other dudes are not going to stand up or condemn you, even if they know it's wrong. They're just going to act like it didn't happen or just keep moving. And that's exactly what this guy does here. It's just so lowly and absolutely pathetic across the board. Mm-hmm. Just stop being so insecure. It's gross. Again.
And pathetic to pretend that you didn't hear it just because you can't bear to call out Yoho for what he said and what a reporter heard. Like, you already know the reporter was right there. It's going to come out. Just don't be so pathetic. But she points it out. AOC tweeted, "Gotta love Republican courage from Representative Roger Williams. When he undeniably sees another man engaged in virulent harassment of a young woman, just pretend you never saw it in the most cartoonish manner possible and keep pushing. He's lying, by the way. He joined in with Yoho. What's wild to me is why you would blatantly lie to a reporter who saw this exchange. You were yelling at me, too," she said, "about, quote, throwing urine." Now, you're probably wondering what that means. I don't know. But he apparently was part of it and now is pretending that I was just thinking about constituent concerns and things like that. But we also have, afterward, Ruben Gallego said, I have suggested the same thing that AOC had, that poverty and unemployment lead to crime. Weird that neither Yoho or any other members ever talked to me that way. Representative Dean Phillips also said, like AOC, I believe poverty to be a root cause of crime. Wonder why Representative Yoho hasn't accosted me on the Capitol steps with the same sentiment. Hashtag shameful. And it is.
Yep. Exactly.
And of course we know.
Yeah. Oh, we totally know what the score is. It's like, it's just one of those unfortunate aspects of being a woman. And hey, you know, it's not going to change, especially if people just sit there and act like they didn't hear it when we damn sure know that they did join in, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's for Yoho, it's like he obviously, he on a fundamental level despises and looks down on women and doesn't respect them. So you have that. That's why he would feel like, I can do this to her. I would never do it to a male representative. But he also is so stupid, so ignorant of who she is and what she is, that he doesn't get that, man, you should have just gone for Dean Phillips or Ruben Gallego, because she's the last one that you want to do this to, you moron. She's not just going, what do you think, she's going to quiet down? She's going to stop speaking out? No, she's going to lash out at you with the social media fury of a tornado of daggers. Like, and he looks like a joke coming out of this, because he's a stupid, ignorant misogynist who doesn't understand the world that we live in.
Exactly. And also, it's like not the best time for Florida right now, as their leadership isn't really doing the best thing. So it's like, way to be Florida, man, yo. You're really winning on this one. Yeah. And especially, yeah, since New York is looking pretty strong.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, you're 100% right. Like, from the very beginning, Matt Gaetz, you know, he was like joking around with his gas mask. And Texas, which is being incredibly hard hit, you got Ted Cruz is like trying to pick little petty social media fights with people, like he doesn't get that his state is on fire. None of them do. They don't feel any responsibility to the people that regrettably voted them into office.
Yep. And I really, really hope that they are no longer in office, because we can't have leadership like this. Like, you just, all of this loss that's going on, America doesn't have time for misogyny and racism, because we are all going to go under if this ship is sinking. Yeah. And these people who are supposed to be at the helm, they don't seem to get that. They want us to stroke their ego and for them to act up like this when, hey, it's not good for any of us.
Yeah. For more political news, breakdowns, interviews, stories of activism, and me trying my hardest to care about the occasional big celebrity news story, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thedamagereport. And you can ring the bell wherever it is so you don't miss anything.
A storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother Brian Mirtis. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast introductory segment. I just played for you a section, a piece from AOC accosted by Republican Congressman at Capitol. Obviously, I have something to say about this. I was blessed in some ways to not have followed my original instincts as a young man, which was to go off to college and to follow a very academically rigorous path. Now, I'll excuse trying to explain why I was definitely lucky in a broader sense, but I will say this. At the time, I would have been pursuing that goal. I would have become very familiar with this way of dissecting problems in terms of intersectionality, a phrase which I think probably way back in the 70s, or I think it was the 60s when it was created, might have meant something else. I'm still trying to find the book that started that trend. But what it has turned into is basically a philosophy to kill analytically any problem with a thousand cuts, so death by a thousand cuts, basically. Meaning, when we see something, if I had been taught the way that a lot of these modern, quote-unquote, leftists were taught, I would try to skew everything either to fit into the feminist critique, to fit into what they call the racist critique, which is not the racist critique, to fit into the homosexual critique. As I've always said to people, I do not use the phrase homophobia because it is an incorrect usage of the term phobia, which means to fear something, and most of these people are not afraid of homosexuals. But I would be trying to fit everything into those kind of intersectional concepts. Thankfully, I don't have that reference point. What my reference points come down to is economics, sociology, psychology, and yes, systems. I do understand that sexism as a cultural system, which then bleeds into other areas in the society, the same with homosexuality, obviously impacts the life quality of women and homosexuals. At the same time, I understand that what is cultural and has been cultural for Europeans when it comes to women and homosexuals goes far beyond cultural when we start talking about racism. But I've done episodes on that. That all said, when I heard this clip, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't go to feminism because it's deeper than feminism to me. Yes, yes, obviously, clearly, that man is hostile towards AOC because she is a woman and he thinks he can intimidate her. That to me is not a feminist problem. That to me is a European masculine problem. There's a book that I was introduced to when I was watching a lecture, and the book is called The Hazards of Being Male, Surviving the Myth of Masculine Privilege. Interesting book. Anyway, this really is about the men more so than it is about the women. But on a deeper level, his hostility isn't just to AOC because she's a woman. I'm old enough to remember and was naive enough during the time period to just listen to these people talk. I'm old enough to remember when people such as the guy who accosted her verbally, he would have been in his mid-30s. I don't know if he was in Congress back then. I didn't check. But this was the same generation that blamed my generation at the time. We were young.
And the people who are graduating during that time period, this is the late 80s, so 88, 89, and through the mid-90s, so 95, 96, maybe even 97, these were the same people blaming every problem on society on that graduating generation. But not only that graduating generation, they took aim at mine too. So people who were graduating from college, people who were graduating from high school, people who were in middle school, we were the cause of every single problem. AOC, 30 years old, would have been born right in the middle of that. Now, I'm being kind because I said through the middle 90s, but the fact of the matter is, until they had to adjust their rhetoric to stoke nationalism, and even then, they still, through their culture wars, targeted us, but they scaled it back a little bit of, you know, on the idea of beating us down. But the core concepts, particularly from, you know, seriously, 88 to, and maybe even earlier than 88, because Reagan definitely played to that. But through the mid-90s, we were the problem generation. They were the problem generation. It wasn't just mine. It was those who fit into those other years, too. They hated that generation with a passion. And so, as we're moving through this first year of what may be a very long decade, and I see this, and I've seen, and I recall, should I say, the hostility last year to the number of young people who are clamoring for Bernie Sanders to be the nominee. When I've heard the Republicans, conservatives, fascists, some of them, slamming Black Lives Matter constantly for no reason other than Black Lives Matter exists, slamming constantly the Sunrise Movement for no other reason but the Sunrise Movement exists, slamming Greta Thunberg for no other reason but she's standing up and saying things that they think is going to be injurious to their corporate interests. Slamming the women's movement that emerged after Donald Trump was elected. And slamming the Parkland, which I apologize for not being able to remember the movement that they created, but I mean, it was huge, and it was young people. I recall all this stuff, and what frustrates me is, because everyone's so committed to seeing things in this very narrowly defined way. And yes, feminism can sometimes, just like the idea of toxic masculinity, can sometimes limit your viewpoint. You can't see those connections. These people have a deep ambivalence and distrust and dislike for this generational movement and this time period when all of these problems, this guy is 65 years old. That means he has been a part of building up all of these problems that this new generation, including myself, we're going to have to deal with this stuff. It is almost as if the hatred that these people have always heaped on us It is almost as if the hatred that these people have heaped on us has more to do with them hating themselves for leaving the world in the state which it is in than anything else. Because how do you love yourself? I mean, seriously. How do you love yourself when you look at the state of the world and you recognize that you're 65 years old, you've likely been in positions of power and influence for some time, and look at the world that you are leaving the next generation. And now that next generation is becoming active and saying, well, we're going to fix this, but Grandpa, you going to sit down and listen to us. I mean, think about, you know, I was very critical, and I mean this, I was very critical of progressives when they went after Whoopi Goldberg, when Whoopi Goldberg told AOC to sit down and to learn the ropes, basically. And I think part of, you know, I thought Whoopi was doing it so AOC could get to a point where, you know, she could be effective in motivating the change that she wanted to. Now, that may be true. Whoopi Goldberg is a smart woman. She plays a dumb character on The View. But, and trust me, ladies and gentlemen, she's playing a dumb character on The View. You don't survive in Hollywood as long as she's survived without being a chameleon. But I also didn't see that connection. Because in the black community, with especially some of the middle class people who have no kind of reach in the lower class rungs, I mean, a few of them do, but most of them don't. And when I say most, I mean like 96-97%. There is this divide also where they just do not like the new generation. Because the new generation is kind of looking at them glaringly going, yeah, you don't represent us. You do not have our best interests at heart. You don't care to listen to us. And so why are we trying to protect you? This is another aspect of the culture wars, ladies and gentlemen. This is another aspect of the culture wars. This is this generational ambivalence. It's not going to end well. It's not going to end well. I would encourage progressives. There's a book called Scapegoat Generation. The concepts in it definitely need to be reviewed. You are seeing come to the head a deep disdain for the young. That's what you're seeing. This nihilistic need to kill the young. All of these people who talk about pro-life this and pro-life that, I hate to tell you, but most of them didn't need to have kids. There is, I know it seems harsh. I really do. I know how much, but honestly, I know too many religious people who should not have kids. It's clear that they never wanted them. I know it seems harsh, but it's what it is. There was a piece that I remember listening to, I think it was on NPR in 2007, 2008, where they were talking about, I apologize, it was 2007, but they were talking about the negative impacts of abstinence-only educations in some religious schools. And I apologize for those of you who have sensitivities to, like, things about sex, but I'm about to mention a word that makes some people uncomfortable. In abstinence-only education, you are literally not allowed to do anything sexual, including masturbation. And so this one young man, he was, I think, in his mid-20s at the time when he wrote this piece. He talked about how, you know, he's 13 and 14, he's 13, 12 and 13, and he's going through changes, and he thinks that there's something wrong with him not being able to control himself and being angry at himself for wanting to go through the process of masturbation. And I mean, he was driving himself nuts. And this continued, if I remember correctly, into his 14th and 15th year. And finally, you know, when he couldn't really take it anymore and he really thought there was something psychically and spiritually wrong with himself, he went to his pastor, almost a broken young man, and talked to the pastor, who was, you know, not too old. So he was comfortable talking with him, and this is definitely something that you typically want to talk to somebody more your age about. And told him about the feelings and how much guilt he was having and all this other stuff. And the pastor just said to him, look, how about this? You know, take the guilt away and forgive yourself and allow yourself to go through the process. And believe not that it's a punishment from God, but that it is just part of God's plan or whatever. And it lifted a lot of pain off of him. The connection between that and what I'm talking about here is we don't ask. We've never really examined what the consequences of anti-abortionism is in these families. Some of these women may have not wanted to have the kids that they have. Some of these men may have not wanted to have the kids that they have. In the story, and actually, I apologize, I said he was 14 or 15. No, he was older than that. He was older than that. He was, I want to say, senior in high school. He might have even been a junior in college. But when he was talking to the pastor about it, he made a mention of the fact that, you know, he had trained himself to see only heads. Because if he could just see only heads, which meant look at the women's heads, then his body wouldn't have the natural response that a male's body has to seeing a beautiful woman. And that even made him more self-conscious and you know, loathing almost of the fact that women were so beautiful, even when they were dressed conservatively. That also pushed him and a lot of his friends into wanting to get married very young to women, girls, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, just so they could have sex. Do you see the connection now? We have never pondered what that philosophy did to those people who basically got married to have children or to have sex and then had children because they weren't supposed to use condoms or anything like that to prevent pregnancy, or thought that they were being cursed and injured by God because they had a child, you know, they had sex maybe when they were 16 and they weren't married, so they were being punished by God. What does that do to parents who have children who think that they're a curse? Or who have children who weren't ready to have children? What does that do? What kind of psychological impact does that have on those families and those parents? Especially when you come from really religious homes. Well, could it possibly be that these people not only end up hating their children, despising them, maybe hate is a harsh word, but despising their children, but maybe they end up despising other people's too. I mean, after all, some of those folks, some of their children might be happier than they were at their age. I mean, think about it. You're 35, 40 years old. You've hit midlife crises. You were married at age 20 so you could have sex. And then you have children that you weren't ready for. Because, I mean, emotionally, you're stunted. If you're that messed up about sex, emotionally, you are stunted. So now, your children are 20, and, you know, Lord knows you probably, maybe, possibly, had a contentious relationship with them. I've seen it. So this isn't just me theorizing. I've seen it. And I'm not talking about one or two homes, either. And then you come up against a young person, 20 years old, who reminds you of yourself, maybe. They have a lot going for them. Mind is sharp. Bright eyes looking into the future. Now, you can't say that you're jealous of them. You know, you can't say that you have an issue with them just because they're young and vibrant and they didn't make the same mistakes you did. So what do you say? Ideologically, they're naive. They're innocent. What they're going to do to the country is going to break the country. It's going to destroy the country. It's going to destroy everything that we have built, that you have built. This falseness of who you are, your life, your children's life, the lies you have told to yourself, yes, it's going to destroy that. Why? Because you were fed a lie. The hardest thing you can ever admit is that your parents were wrong. I know, I've been there, that your parents were that your parents weren't infallible, that they weren't perfect. Been there too. And that they did as best they could, and because they were messed up human beings, they messed up. And possibly messed you up. I mean, those are hard things to reconcile with and to admit. So psychically, because, you know, you weren't strong enough to turn away from them back then, psychically, it's someone else's fault. It's someone else's problem. And in fact, you're right. It is someone else's fault and problem. But you haven't dealt with your mother and father issues. So you lash out at this younger generation, this younger person who is like you. You want to destroy in them what was destroyed in you. You want to destroy them like your parents, your culture destroyed you. I don't don't want to give the impression that I'm giving a free pass to every single person who dislikes AOC or young people or what have you. That's not what I'm doing here. But I do want you to understand that some of these people that you're meeting, absolutely, that's their problem. The book, The Authoritarian Personality, helped me kind of start seeing that. It's a really powerful book. Came out in 2007, and I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, it's prophetic. I'm kind of shocked that it's not more widely known. You have an older generation that hates the younger generation, and they're not even shy about admitting it. They're not. The question is, why do they want to destroy the younger generation? Well, part of it definitely is, if you've failed so miserably, you might want to cover up your failure. Now, that's not always a conscious recognition. Half the time, it's subconscious. But it's there. Oh, but it's there. And this is something that I know very well, because in the black community, we have a lot of broken parents. And a lot of those broken parents seek to break in their children what was broken in them. And you can see it happen in real time. You can see mothers with daddy issues trying to break the masculine, powerful masculine, not negative, toxic masculine spirit in their boys. You can see men with mama with mommy issues doing the same with their little girls. You can see men with huge abandonment issues executing those issues with their children. You can. You can see the same thing with women in detachment issues. We are a microcosm for the rest of society. I can see it there, so I can diagnose it in the white community. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can always reach out to me. As I said, this is an introductory. So, I will see you on the next part, or installment, should I say. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.